It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR news and diverse music. Thanks so much for being with us on this Thursday edition of our program. Of course, this is the Outer Spaces edition of our show, and we talk about all things, of course, outdoors, and we take your plant and garden questions and comments as well. With us, as usual, for this final edition of our program, it's Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florists. And Doug, how the heck are you?
I'm great, Sean. Sorry it's the final edition, but I posted it on Facebook, too.
We'll have an awful lot of fun today, and of course, you and Laura will be back occasionally to chat outdoors with us.
Certainly.
As well. And as I just mentioned, Laura Stein is with us from Laura Stein Gardens. We appreciate you being with us today, Laura.
Thank you. Hi, Sean. Hi, Doug.
It's good to be here.
Good.
And of course, we want to hear your questions and comments today as well. Feel free to call us, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. While we wait for you to get in touch with us this hour, Laura, I know every time you're on the program, you bring a kind of a conversation starter for us here. And this week, you know, we've talked about it a little bit on the show before. In fact, Doug, I think even last week we chatted about insects. Of course, you know, there are insects that can damage your garden, that can really hurt you outdoors. But there are also a lot of beneficial insects as well. And you sent along a few photos to get the conversation started here.
I did. And, you know, it's one of those topics that's a little bit, you really have to seek out the information, because really when we're kind of marketed to as gardeners to spray them all and get rid of them all. But the truth is, you can help create a balance in your garden by knowing what beneficial insects are and then not getting rid of those, because if you've got the beneficials, they keep the other guys in check. And then you've got a healthy ecosystem in your garden. And actually, yes, I got this topic. I was listening to the show last week, and there was a caller who sent in a photo, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. She had a great question, so I thought maybe we could expand on that a little bit today.
Absolutely. So you're really talking about just keeping a balance in the garden, basically.
Yes. And so think about it this way. If you think of your garden as an ecosystem, which truly it is, there has to be a food source for the beneficial insects to keep them there. Because if you bring in beneficial insects, which you can usually buy them through mail order, which is a little bit weird, but kind of cool too.
Yeah.
If you bring them in your garden, but there aren't any insects for them to eat, they'll go other places.
So you buy them, and if there's nothing there, they leave.
Right. So the point today is, if you see insects that are eating plants, and you know, a great example is aphids. So you see your plant stems covered in aphids, look for some beneficial insects that are maybe taking care of that problem. And that's why I sent some photos in today, so I can show you maybe the larva of some of those beneficial insects, and you'll say, aha, well, I've got those there, so I'm just going to leave them alone. I'm going to let those beneficial insects eat the aphids and try to create this balance.
All right.
Well, so that they stay.
That's quite a tease. So, well, I'm looking forward to it. Well, let's dive right in here. I brought the photos up, and of course, you can check out the photos that Laura sent in on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters, where you can also post your questions and your comments as well. So, Laura, I was a little, I guess I didn't really know what I was getting into when I opened these photos, because I'm a novice gardener at best. I've learned an awful lot from you and from Doug and others we've had on this show. But when I think beneficial insects, the only one that immediately comes to mind are bees, and for the obvious reasons.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what you've sent along to start the conversation.
Well, and I'm going to just say my obvious beneficial insect, of course, is ladybugs, but now she can expand.
And that
further.
Is what, yes, yeah. That is, they're definitely one that I want to talk about. So we all know what a ladybug looks like, and technically the correct term is ladybird beetle, which I always try to teach my kids.
Ladybird
beetle, isn't that interesting? I think because it's technically it's a beetle and not a bug. It is a whole different beetle thing. Anywho. Anyway, doesn't matter. But we all know what the mature look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the red backs and the black dots. But we don't always know what the larvae look like. So ladybugs or ladybird beetles, they do eat aphids. So if you find a plant that's got a lot of aphids on it, but you see ladybugs there, just keep an eye on it for a few days. Let the ladybird beetles do their thing. But here's the thing. And that's that I didn't know until this year what a ladybird beetle larva looked like.
Hmm.
So if you, yes, it is. It looks actually somewhat prehistoric
and a
little scary.
Yes, it does.
But it is. It has 6 legs on the front and it's got spikes on the back. Sean's got the photo pulled up on the Midday Matters Facebook page, and it's got orange stripes on the back, and like I said, it's black head, black rear invert bottom
say, it
of
it
the,
looks like
of
a black
insect.
Head basically a black head, a black body, and it looks like right on the back this bright orange almost horseshoe
yes.
shape.
It's, yeah,
and if I saw that, I'd want to get rid of it.
Oh my
immediately.
God, right. I would too.
That is exactly what I would think too if I hadn't learned this. So it's great to know if that thing's eating. You know, if it's where aphids are, you know, go ahead and leave that alone. Or if it's anywhere in your garden, you want to leave it because those are beneficial insects.
Hmm. All right. We do want to hear what your suggestions are at home for beneficial insects you've found in your garden. Maybe you have a question that we can try to tackle here. Call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Right now, of course, we're talking about beneficial insects. A little bit later on, though, we'll be happy to take your general plant and garden questions. Doug, you look like you want to jump in there.
Well, you know, first off, you've got to understand, too, that when you have beneficial insects in your garden, any kind of insecticides that are used are going to kill the beneficial insects as well.
Correct.
As the ones you want to get rid of. So this is the thing. What are you going to do? And I had a lady who called me the other day who had these worms that were eating her plants. And I was saying, well, you know, you can get Dipelt, which is the worm killer. And she says, well, it won't kill my earthworms, will it? Yeah, it'll kill worms.
Everything.
If it's a worm, it's going to die. So you really have that kind of a problem where if you're using any kind of an insecticide, you're going to kill good and bad because it kills beetles or it kills worms. And Dipel is totally organic, but that doesn't mean it doesn't kill.
Right, right. It's still
toxic. You know, earthworms are great. And what do? They benefit by aerating mm-hmm. your soil.
Mm-hmm.
And, and when I think of insects, I can't think of any good purpose for a mosquito. Is there one? Oh, yes, they feed bats.
They feed bats, right.
They're good food, but other than that, I cannot think of a good reason.
That's a great point, Doug. And it's one of the reasons why if you can encourage beneficial insects in your garden, then you don't have to use the insecticides and throw the ecosystem of your garden out of balance. So that's a great point.
Doesn't get more organic than that, really.
Right. And you know, when you're talking about worms, some people call caterpillar worms. And one of the photos I sent, and this was in direct response to your caller last week, I have this beautiful fennel at home, and it's probably 4 to 5 feet.
Hmm.
It's really lush and big. And if I hadn't have known better, I would have probably just done a little bit of freaking out this spring because I counted 12 to 14 caterpillars on there. But I know from years past that these are, Sean's got the photo pulled up. If you were to look at this, you would think, oh my gosh, I need to pick those off. But these are the larvae of the swallowtail butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
So and one of the host plants for those, and for monarchs and for other butterflies, there's lots of butterflies. Is fennel
and parsley
as well.
Yeah,
and you can get lists of these online. There's whole lists, and I'm sure the extension office has one too. The thing with butterflies is they will go and drink the nectar of flowers, and almost any flower, because nectar's cheap. It's basically sugar water. But butterflies are very specific as to where they will lay their eggs, so that because their larvae, once they hatch from those eggs, specifically need a certain plant. Mm-hmm. So a monarch butterfly will never lay her eggs on anything other than a milkweed.
Oh.
So they are one, they're very specific.
And very briefly, for those who can't get to the Facebook page right now, I mean, these are large caterpillars.
Oh, they're large.
They're very big. It's a green and black striped body with yellow dots on it. Mm-hmm.
And they're usually bigger than this picture. I mean, the ones I see are even bigger yet.
Mm-hmm.
But this brings up an interesting point for people who want to have a butterfly garden.
Right.
Plant parsley.
Plant parsley and fennel,
and
go get some milkweed. Yeah,
there you
if
are.
You want, and it's one of the reasons why the monarch population is, can I say, crashing? I mean, it's especially this year, it's down really far, and part of the problem is that, you know, when we go in to do construction and other things, we clear out a lot of plants, and a lot of with our agriculture. I know I grew up in a farm community, and one of the things was to get rid of the milkweed because you didn't want the cows to eat it. It's toxic to them. But now there's not a lot of milkweed out there. So if we can grow more in our gardens, we really will help boost the monarch population, and it needs it.
And I know Sean's probably going to want to break here before long. But I want to know, this is a monarch. I can see it fine. This is a monarch-type caterpillar.
It looks very similar to a monarch, yes.
But there must be many other kinds of caterpillars, because let me tell you this. In the garden mum business, when you're growing garden mums,
mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you mentioned the fennel and I mentioned parsley. When we're growing garden mums, I have seen garden mums totally bombarded with caterpillars. And not just this one, but I've seen a single chrysanthemum with as many as four or five different colored caterpillars. And I wonder what they're from.
Yeah.
What else makes caterpillars? Do you know?
Well, every moth and every butterfly.
Every moth and butterfly
has its own distinct larvae.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
We do need to take a quick break here. We'll be back, though, in 2 minutes. In the meantime, we really hope you'll get in touch with us. I know we were having a little bit of trouble with the phones at the start of the hour here. I think we're resolved now. Do call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet @MiddayMatters. And don't forget, you can see Laura's photos of some very specific, from some beneficial insects. And that's what we're talking about right now. Do stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, how being African in America compares with being African-American. We talk with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie about her new semi-autobiographical novel, Americana. Growing up in Nigeria, she wasn't defined by her race. When she came to America to attend college, she found herself in the middle of racial conflicts she didn't even understand. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
On Talk of the Nation, we talk about what you're talking about.
I turned on the radio and I heard this and I nearly drove off the freeway.
I have experienced a lot of what you've been talking about.
I'm Neil Conan. Surprising voices, interesting conversations on the topics you're talking about. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Ticket scalping puts the good seats out of reach for many concertgoers. They're not the only ones unhappy about it. Take Kid Rock, for example.
I'm tired of seeing the old rich guy in the front row with the hot girlfriend with her beer in the air just screaming the whole time, and the old rich guy standing there like he could care less.
The economics of ticket scalping, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Thank you. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling, controlling damage caused by fire, water, smoke, and other perils since 1993. More information at whycallpaul.com.
It's 12:22. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR News and diverse music. And we're exploring your outer spaces today with Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florists and Laura Stein from Laura Stein Gardens. Thanks very much to both of you for being with us today. We were talking in the first part of the program, and we'll continue that discussion about beneficial insects. And we hope that you'll get in touch with us with your favorite beneficial insects, along with your general plant and garden questions and comments as well. The number, it's 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Doug, I know we have a caller and a few questions and comments online as well, but I know you had a question you wanted to pose first.
Yeah, this is something people can think about while we're answering these other questions. But, you know, the thought comes to me, okay, which comes first, the monarch butterfly or the caterpillar? And if you think about that, what you see first is you see the caterpillars right now, and then later they will cocoon up and out comes the butterflies. So where did the caterpillar come from? So my theory must be that it... Understand, I'm a plant person, so I'm not a bug person, so I'm not supposed to have to know about bugs.
You'll have to know everything.
And people always bring me weeds and say, identifies, I grow beneficial plants, not weeds. I'm not really, you know, I just know how to kill them. But anyway, back to that question, I figure that what happens is the butterflies then later fly around. They lay their eggs, and the ones that don't have time to become caterpillars or they do, and then it gets cold, they burrow down into the ground, and then in the springtime, and obviously it has to be when the soil is warm, then they come up and start the cycle over again. So that's got to be where it is. It's a cycle, and it starts with the caterpillar coming up from last year.
Right.
You don't see butterflies come up out of the ground from last year.
Well, I would imagine, now I'm getting into a little bit of territory where I don't know specific details, so I'll just say that first, that some of the eggs could possibly overwinter here. Mm-hmm. But you know that the monarch butterfly, so, you know, that she migrates south down to Mexico, we know, and there's a whole migration path and route that they take. So... at the end of the season, when those become butterflies, you know, so that group heads south, and then they lay eggs and move as they move
right
back up north. So I know that about the monarch, and there's so many moths and butterfly species. I'd be surprised if some of the eggs didn't overwinter here.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Looks like we have a couple callers on the line, as well as a few comments and questions to get to on Facebook and via email. We hope you'll get in touch with us, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Comment on our Facebook page. Melinda sent a couple photos along. And I think you can see that on our Facebook page here. Melinda says, her new best friend, I remember these from when I was a kid. We just called them pincher beetles. And in these photos, it's a brown, almost wine-colored beetle.
It's
really
large. Mm-hmm.
A large bug with giant jaws up front. Melinda says, I found it in a bucket today, took a few pictures and released it. What is it really, and is it good for my yard? I live on Hirsch Road, still kind of out in the boonies, fields front and back. Love the bugs I see, though. I've seen a Luna, house centipedes, giant spiders, and now this lovely beetle as well. Love the show, and we'll miss it a lot. Well, thank you very much, Melinda. Laura, Doug, any thoughts on this bug? A very large insect. Very large jaws.
Well, I, like Mindy, remember these from when I was a kid, and we were always fascinated with them because they have those huge pinchers on the front. And, you know, you want to you want to try to get your kid's sister to see if they actually work.
or you want to get it under your shoe.
Right. Yeah, right. Oh, that too. I just know enough to know that it's a beetle and that's all. So I don't know if it causes a lot of harm or not. But one thing I did notice that Mindy said was that she saw a Luna. And she's referring to a Luna moth. And if anyone has ever seen those, they're just a giant moth, and then they have the big eyes. Well, it looks like they don't have big eyes. On their wings, it looks like a big eye, and that's part of what they do to scare predators off. It's part of their disguise. But it is it's kind of a magical sight when you see one, if you've ever seen one. It's just amazing.
Let's open the phones here and go to our callers. And, of course, if you'd like to get in touch, 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones here and go to Cindy. Cindy, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, hello. I have a question about a tree that I transplanted last fall. Mm-hmm. And it is called a golden chain. It kind of looks like almost like a wisteria bloom.
Mm-hmm.
It's yellow. And I planted it in the fall and mulched and put some good dirt down. And I put the spikes for the fertilizer. And then this spring, it did have the blooms. I was all excited. The blooms came and it budded out pretty nicely. And now lately, it's been losing its leaves.
Mm.
Not curling up, they're just turning yellow and falling off. So I don't know if too much water, too much fertilizer.
Well, are new greener leaves coming on behind it?
Not really.
No?
Not yet, anyway.
And what percentage have fallen off? If you could give it, you know, if you looked at the whole tree and said, is it 10%?
75, 80.
Wow, that's
a
lot.
It's really losing its leaves, yeah.
Well, we can't blame
it. It didn't get a lot of leaves to begin with.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? But I did have quite a few of the chains, the blooms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just worried I'm going to lose it, and I'm not sure what's going on with
it. Well, we know what's not going on with it. It's not drought.
Right.
We have not had a drought situation here unless you planted it on a mound or something, then you could have your own little mini drought going on. But the first thought I had was when you said you transplanted it, was I hope you didn't transplant it too deeply. That's not a good thing to do with trees and shrubs.
I think I followed the directions and no, did not. I don't believe I did. No, I would say not.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't have a real clue for you. It should have rooted right in but done fine. Did you want to say something, Laura?
I was just with all the rain we have. I was going to just toss out. Have you been checking the moisture level around the base of the tree? You know, putting your kind of digging down just with your finger down a couple inches to see, is it, you know, just make sure there's no standing water there. Is it too wet?
Yeah.
Does
this
area drain?
I have mulch around it, and I have some flowers just around it, you know, underneath. Mm-hmm. And I probably should do that. My flowers aren't dying.
Okay.
That I've got planted there. Dianthus, I think, is what I got there.
Mm-hmm.
No, what do I got there? I'm not sure what I have there underneath it now. But, yeah, I was afraid if a tree does get too much water, what are the symptoms? I mean,
Yellowing and dropping
and,
of the leaves.
And wilting. If they're too dry.
The symptoms are the same. Yeah.
This is what I tell people when they have a potted plant, it welts. Well, is it too wet or is it too dry? They want me to tell them over the phone, and they're like, I don't know. I said, well, lift it. Is it really, really heavy? But you can't lift your tree.
Yeah, so checking the soil a couple inches down.
Too much fertilizer, because I did put spikes again in the spring, and every couple weeks, or I would say once a week, I would also miracle grow it.
Yeah, lay off that.
I would. And Cindy, one of the things I was going to mention is that I think the fertilizer spikes tend to work a year or two after your plant is established. So I don't know. You know, I think my understanding is that those are for established trees and not ones that are just starting to grow. So I would say that could be a likely culprit, too much fertilizer.
Okay.
Yeah, fertilizer, I get to say it again, fertilizer is not medicine. It's usually a bad thing to do when a plant is not doing well. Fertilizer is more of a tone-up product. When a plant is looking good and healthy, you give it fertilizer, and it tones it up and makes it shinier and greener and just, you know,
see,
more
you would
vigorous.
Think, you would think the opposite, you know.
Yeah. Right.
You would think it needed it. Okay.
It's not medicine.
And so, Cindy, what you need in it for a newly planted tree, shrub, or perennial, what you want to use is a fertilizer that's high in phosphorus. So you are probably aware there are, on all fertilizers, there's the three numbers in the back.
Correct.
And so you want your middle number to be high. That's your phosphorus number. So
what
that does is it stimulates root growth.
Okay.
And that's what
Very
we're always
good.
Trying to do.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much.
Good luck.
You bet.
Cindy,
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet. I promise we'll get to our email and Facebook questions in just a moment here, but we have a very patient caller on the line. Let's open the phones and go to Myra. Myra, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Oh, thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure
We have
can.
You just fine.
Okay. I have a squash problem. I have five summer squash plants, and every morning they have bright, beautiful orange blossoms on them. The problem is the blossoms are falling off without setting fruit. Is there anything I can do?
Well, that's an interesting question because some of them are male and some are female. And so it's the, I believe it's the female that will set the fruit and the male will fertilize it. So I don't know. And it, how does it fertilize it? Well, that's where the bugs come in. They jump around and they get the pollen from one and put it in the other. And so this is what happens. And once that happens, then the one bloom should die. But you should have some that produce fruit also. And you're just not getting that, are you?
I have one fruit that's about an inch long.
This sounds like a great question for our Allen County Extension Office, our Purdue Extension Office. And Myra, I can give you that number if you'd like.
Sure. I think everybody could use that.
Yes.
Number.
Yes.
Exactly.
You all. Exactly. Yes. It's 260, of course, 481-486-8826.
Okay.
And that sounds like a great question for them.
Okay. And I had forgotten that there were male and female flowers. So that may be the problem. Yeah. I'll give it another week. And if I don't have 400 zucchini and I only end up with 40, that's a good thing.
I never heard of a zucchini that didn't produce way too many either. They always produce too many.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and I am desperately going to miss this program.
Oh, well, thank you.
Myra, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-471-9264. Email us. Get to our Facebook page where you can also see photos that Laura Stein sent in, or if you'd like to, you can tweet us at Midday Matters. We do have a few messages to get to here. We have time for maybe one before we just have to go to a break. A question from Amy referring to a point Laura brought up earlier. Where can you get milkweed?
Milkweed's tricky to find, but you can get sometimes swamp milkweed, and definitely the butterfly, I'm going to say the butterfly milkweed you can find, I know, at Arbor Farms. Hmm. I know you can find it at Plant Center. And I hate to just pull those two out. There's probably other nurseries in town that you can find those. That's the orange blooming that's really quite pretty in your garden. And then milk, the swamp milkweed, and hopefully coming soon, the common milkweed you can get from Riverview Nursery, which is the new native plant nursery up in Spencerville.
Hmm. All right. Amy, we appreciate the question, and you'll have to report back how your milkweed is doing once you find it. We do need to take a quick break for the news. I know Tony is hanging patiently on the phone line. Tony, I hope you'll stay with us through the news break. And, of course, if more folks want to get in touch, please do. 800-471-9264. Email is middaymatters@nipr.fm. Facebook page is up. Twitter feed is up as well. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, how being African in America compares with being African-American. We talk with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie about her new semi-autobiographical novel, Americana. Growing up in Nigeria, she wasn't defined by her race. When she came to America to attend college, she found herself in the middle of racial conflicts she didn't even understand. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. Legal experts on both sides of Indiana's same-sex marriage debate say Wednesday's Supreme Court rulings will not impact the state in the immediate future. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
The Supreme Court struck down a section of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, meaning the federal government will have to recognize same-sex marriages for couples married in the 12 states in which those marriages are legal. Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller says the court's ruling in the DOMA case is a victory for state sovereignty when it comes to defining marriage.
In terms of this is an authority that the states have traditionally had, and the Supreme Court didn't say anything other than that was an appropriate use of authority.
Yet Indiana Equality Action legal advisor Don Scherfick says the court imposed a stricter standard for defending traditional marriage laws in states like Indiana that still have them.
My sense is that what they've said to the states is, hey, this is a traditional area for you to regulate marriage, but in doing so, there's going to be a new test here, and that is whether or not you're exercising that authority such that you don't disadvantage unpopular groups.
Scherfick says that could lead to larger questions about Indiana's proposed constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage withstanding a legal challenge. Zeller says he plans to discuss the legal implications of the court's ruling with members of the General Assembly as they prepare to vote on the amendment next session. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
A judge will consider whether to fine the Federal Bureau of Prisons in contempt for not allowing American Taliban fighter John Walker Lind and other Muslim inmates in an Indiana prison unit to pray together 5 times per day. The agency says inmates of all religions housed in Lind's unit in the Terre Haute prison have been allowed to pray together 3 times daily since the end of last year. The American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana says the order requires the prison to accommodate Lind's belief that Islam mandates Muslims pray together 5 times a day. A court hearing is scheduled Thursday morning in U.S. District Court in Indianapolis. Department of Correction officials say they plan to remodel one of its largest facilities to better handle mentally ill inmates. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's A.J. Brammer reports, DOC representatives appeared in a federal court Wednesday after a judge questioned whether the department was abiding by an earlier ruling.
After the Department of Correction was accused last year of locking inmates with mental disabilities in solitary confinement for hours at a time, a district court judge mandated the department improve its treatment of those inmates. 6 months later, the judge and representatives from Indiana's chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union said the Department of Correction was not clear in how they plan abiding by that ruling. In Wednesday's hearing, DOC officials said they plan to remodel facilities at the Pendleton Correctional Facility to accommodate the more than 400 seriously mentally ill inmates throughout the state. Once the upgrades are made, they plan to transfer inmates from other state prisons to Pendleton. Deputy Attorney General Thomas Quigley is representing the DOC. He declined to be interviewed, but during the hearing said the plans are on pace with the court's orders and stressed getting funding approval for facility renovations and training prison staff will take time. Indiana ACLU legal director Ken Falk says his agency is pleased with the DOC's plans, but emphasizes they need to be put into action quickly.
Well, I mean, I have concerns because the court found that the existing conditions in which the prisoners exist is a violation of the Eighth Amendment, is unconstitutional. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that there's much that can be done about that until we get the new facility up and running.
Judge Tanya Walton Pratt also praised the DOC's efforts, but says she will have to see the new facilities before she determines whether the plans comply with the court ruling. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm A.J. Brammer.
This afternoon, you can expect partly sunny skies with a high near 84. Tonight, there is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly between 8 p.m. and midnight, and we'll have a low of about 66 degrees. And looking at Friday, there's a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., otherwise partly sunny with a high near 80 degrees. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI, your home for NPR news and diverse music.
The About 20 minutes before 1 o'clock, this is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR news and diverse music. We're exploring your outer spaces on this edition of our program. A lot of good questions and comments so far. We were also talking earlier in the show about beneficial bugs in your garden. If you have any particular favorites, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have a question or comment, get in touch. 800-471-9264. Email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We have a caller on the line here, a very patient caller, in fact. And let's open the phones and go to Tony. Tony, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
How do you do?
Hi, Tony.
I was weighing in on the beetles and moths.
Yeah.
You know, the beetle with the big pinchers. I believe they were called a stag beetle.
That sounds right.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah.
I recall seeing the larvae or the grubs for it. And, it might be the size of the last digit on your pinky, that last segment of your finger. And pretty good size, scary looking grub.
I was going to say, in the theater of my mind, those jaws are about 3 feet wide.
They're pretty harmless. Harmless bugs. I don't remember ever being hurt by them, but we played with them.
Yeah,
right.
Tony, I think you may have solved the mystery for us here.
Yeah, I think
Thank you. Now I can sleep tonight.
Yep, the stag beetle.
Somebody was confused about their moths. The one with the big eye, I believe, was called a Cecropia moth. The Luna moth is kind of a milky green, celery green color.
Oh, did I get that wrong? That would have been me. Okay.
I recall going to the playground in the evenings if the dew was real heavy, they'd land on the playground equipment because they couldn't fly.
Mm.
Oh. And we get them. I mean, we get these monsters bigger than your hand to walk around in your arms.
Wow. Mm.
That's kind of creepy too.
That sounds kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Oh my. Well, Tony, we appreciate the insight and the mysteries. I think for the moment is solved here. Thank you.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you, Tony. We should have had Tony on as a guest too.
Yes,
he sounds like he knows his bugs.
Thanks again, Tony, and of course, no callers in the hopper right now. So if you give us a ring, we'll put you on as soon as we possibly can. Here, the number is 800-471-9264. We had a caller leave a message a while ago. Mike is getting a lot of clover around his tomatoes, and he's reluctant to use a spray. How can he get rid of the clover? And Laura, you and I were talking over the break here. Clover grows in pretty thick.
It
may be difficult to just pull it if it's a reasonably sized space.
It is
one of those... it is one of those flowers that's really good for bees.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I know. They use,
but you don't have to have it at the tomatoes.
Depending on how big the patch is, I mean, you could pull it away from there. But yes, if you needed to get rid of it.
I think the way to get rid of a weed like that, if you don't want to use any chemicals, and you don't want to use chemicals
around a tomato plant, for sure,
but is to constantly... keep it dug up and hoed and don't let it grow. First of all, if it grows in flowers, you're going to put seeds down and then you have more.
Right, true.
And not that it won't also spread by root, but if you consistently keep pulling it and getting it out of there, which you'll do your tomato plant a favor anyway because they like to have their surface
cleared, yeah.
Disturbed and you know, aerated or whatever you want to call it. And so it's good for the tomato to keep that soil loosened. When it rains, the water can get through the soil a lot easier than having a compacted soil. Mm-hmm. So just keep after them. And, you know, I used to have a garden where I could see it from my dining room and it was crazy, but I had what we called the action hoe. I loved the action hoe. It cut in both directions. Both directions. It was kind of triangular in shape and had a blade across the bottom that was sharp on both sides. And I would literally go through my entire garden at least every 5 to 7 days with my action hoe. And if you don't let the weeds get big, it's so easy to just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, as fast as you can walk. Mm. And you just you're just cutting across the top surface, which is also good when you're doing this around a tomato plant. And let me tell you, I always planted a few extra tomatoes because, whoops, I would chop one off.
So you're saying that, I mean, it's pretty easy to prevent something like this clover from invading this space, but in terms of getting it out, yeah, it may be much
more
difficult.
He's
going
to have to do some heavy-duty digging to begin with, and he can't dig deep around tomatoes, so he's going to have to do some, with a hand trowel, slicing sideways across the surface of the soil and get it out. And then if you can find an action hoe, a lot of places don't sell them. They're hard to find.
eBay.
Yeah, action hoes are very cool. I used to always have one or two of them. And I'm telling you, the reason I'd accidentally cut down a pepper or tomatoes because I would do it so fast. And you do that, and boy, the garden just stayed weed-free all the time. I didn't care if little weeds would pop up. Mm-hmm. But remember this, when you have weeds and you don't get them down before they bloom, then they're going to drop seeds and you're going to have more weeds.
Right.
And they're hard to get rid of when they're large.
Well, I hopefully Mike can get in there and get them taken care of. Good luck, Mike. We're pulling for you.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
But we're not going to come over.
He'd like us to pull for him, wouldn't he?
Got a question here on Facebook from Katie. Katie says, I keep getting a powdery white mildew on my peony bushes, even after I trim the bushes at the end of the summer. How should I treat them?
Well, of course, she trims them at the end of the summer, and then she gets powdery mildew the following year, and that's because mildew comes back every year. It's in the air. It floats. It spores. And when you have conditions that are right for mildew, which is this spring
is
has
this
been
spring
just
right?
perfect. Mm-hmm. It's been damp. It's been humid. It's warm. Everything that can possibly make mildew grow, and it just grows. So first off, how do you prevent it? Don't ever let the foliage be wet at night. You can't help it if it rains, but don't water things late in the evening or you can get mildew. And then also some plants are more susceptible to mildew than others, and peonies are, lilacs are, some varieties of rose bushes. In fact, most of them, for some reason, the knockouts rarely get it. They're very disease resistant and bug resistant. So knockouts, it's one of the reasons they're so popular.
Mildew is one of those things, though, that once you get it, you have it. Now, you can pre-treat with a fungicide.
Sulfur.
And before you ever see the mildew. And avoid it in that way. The nice thing is it doesn't typically hurt the plant. It just makes, we don't like looking at it, but no. It doesn't typically hurt the plant. And then at the end of the season, when you cut those back, or if it's a lilac, you can't really cut the whole plant down like you can a peony. Go ahead and rake those leaves away from the base, and that will help somewhat for next season.
But sulfur is the fungicide of choice for mildew, and you can buy it as a dry dust. It's called garden sulfur, and you can dust it. Dusting's a tough thing because people tend to overdust. It needs to be very lightly done. Picture this. This is the other method of applying it. You mix it with water, but it doesn't dissolve. Okay? So you mix it with water, but it doesn't dissolve. So how do you get it out of the tank? You have to shake the tank, then spray. Shake the tank, then spray. And what happens is it comes out with the water, and it lays across your plant like wet, but the water evaporates away, and what is left is a very fine covering of sulfur. That's how fine it needs to be. And when you just apply it as a dust, it's very difficult to apply it fine enough.
Katie, we appreciate your question here, and good luck. I think we're going to skip our last break. We have a whole bunch of questions that we're going to try to get to as many as we can. So are you all up for a bit of a lightning round
the last 10 minutes?
Here
let's
go.
Let's do it. Yes. Okay, now we have a question here from Daniel. Daniel says, a perfect topic today to address a couple burning questions I've been waiting to ask. I have some strawberries that I've mulched around. Some are still producing berries, and all are happily producing runners. I've noticed a few then have what looks like a mini funeral pyre being formed around them by ants. They're collecting tiny bits of mulch and mounding it up. Around an established plant, these are a couple to 3 inches high. Are these ants helping or hurting my berries? I've not noticed aphids or any other harmful insects on the plants.
They're not helping.
I was just going to say they're not hurting. So,
I don't like
ants. Are they aerating the soil? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, piling soil up and mulch around the base of the plant, that's not going to help.
No.
You know, that doesn't help them. No. So,
I wouldn't like them because I don't particularly care for ants. However, when I say mosquitoes have no purpose in life, I have this theory that ants can one day will become the solution to problems. And I don't know what problems, but you watch someday.
Well, that's someday, a little divergence there from the strawberry topic. But
there
I
you
hear
go.
You.
There
I
you go.
You.
One day
it's
we'll
a
think,
theory and we'll,
one day we'll
keep
think, why did we kill all those ants? They are so beneficial.
Well, they do aerate the soil. And most of the time they don't hurt things. But I would say what could be hurting them is the piling up around the stem, so I would just pull those out.
Yeah.
I'd pull that out and get the mulch and the soil away from the stem of the strawberries. Otherwise, I can't think they're hurting them that much.
Okay.
Daniel, we appreciate the question here. Let's go to Lee now. Lee says, was contemplating getting a Japanese stewardia. Is that right? Japanese stewardia for my dewdrop. Have read inconsistent zones and not sure if they're good for northeastern Indiana. Also concerned about roots and prefer roots that go down instead of out. Would this plant fall into that category? If not, can you suggest a flowering tree that would be great for a dewdrop with roots that go down instead of out?
Okay, I'll address this zoning thing quickly because we had this talk one day in the other room about zoning. The world has come up with the idea that we're now zone 6, and I don't agree with this change in zoning. The garden people that sell plants are all excited about it because if we're considered zone 6, then well, that means there's a whole other batch of plants that can be sold. I don't believe it. Sometimes zone 5, yeah.
I think it's a scientific thing, though. I mean, I don't
yeah,
think
but
it's,
I don't believe it because sometimes zone 5 plants don't survive winter in our area. Why should we think that the zone 6 plants will? Maybe some will, but to just come right out and say zone 6 is now okay in Indiana. Now, remember, they're saying in Indiana.
Right.
Well, it's way different in southern Indiana than it is in northern Indiana. So this guy is asking a question about Fort Wayne, and I'd be skeptical to do anything that says zone 6.
Well, it's based on the change in the climate and our temperatures now. So it's not coming from the landscape industry. That's coming from the climate scientists. So they've done that.
The landscape industry is really happy about it.
Well, that could be. But to answer the question, I am not an expert in stewardia, and truthfully, I would need to look that up. I'm not understanding actually the dewdrop part of this question. Can either of you chime in on
it might
on
be
what
a variety
he's referring
name
to
or
with
something,
that?
But
okay.
I don't know either.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I don't think I can really help with that.
It may be a good idea as we mentioned earlier to get in touch with the Allen County Extension office. They may have some more specific information they can point you towards anyway. So, Lee, best of luck. Sorry we couldn't give you too big of a hand there. I know we have a caller on the line, so open the phones briefly here and see if we can't go to Lynn. Lynn, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
The question I have is, about 2 years ago, I transplanted my daylilies from the side of the house to the back of my house, which is full sun. It's a southern exposure. And they're not blooming. They didn't really bloom last year, and they're not blooming this year. And I don't know why. And I wondered if you could help me with that.
Well, you know, some varieties are later bloomers, however, and a lot of them are just now coming into bloom. So perhaps it's a later bloomer, but why it didn't bloom last year, I don't know, unless maybe it was because of the drought and it was so dry. What did you want to say?
But I'm sorry, Lynn, you said you transplanted it last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay.
Uh-huh.
It's not uncommon for shrubs, and, you know, last year almost doesn't count because it was so hard on most things,
yeah.
But especially newer transplants. But in general, shrubs, trees, even perennials that have been transplanted in the last year or two, it's not uncommon for them not to flower right away. And that's because the hormone that the plant uses to flower is the same one that it uses to root out. And it always chooses to set roots down before it will flower. So I would say if it's got good green leafy growth and it's looking healthy otherwise, you could just wait on it. You could also give it a fertilizer that's high in phosphorus, and that's what it uses both to root out and to flower. So that could help.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Could I ask one other question?
Go for it.
Very, very briefly. We're getting to the end of the program here.
Okay, very briefly. You were talking about milkweed earlier, and we live out in the country, and we have pasture for horses, and we have more milkweed in there that I want to have, but I want grass, obviously, for the horses. But do you happen to know, I know milkweed is good for the monarch butterflies. Do you know if milkweed, though, is toxic to horses?
That's a great question. You know, I know the stomachs of cows and the stomachs of horses are different. I don't know if it's toxic to horses or not.
Okay.
There's an agricultural branch of the extension office too, and I would call them. Or yeah, a
large.
That's a great idea.
Veterinarian, possibly. Okay. Possibly the dog and cat one would know too.
Yeah. Well, the milkweed is really good out there for the monarch. I'll tell you that.
Yes. Good. Good for you. I hope you can keep it.
Yeah. And thanks. I wanted to say real quickly, I love the show. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Lynn, you're very kind. Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. We have 2 minutes in the show here. I want to try to get one more question in before we have to say so long. So here we go. One more from Nancy. Nancy says, I've got two clematis plants that flourish through the spring. And then when the weather gets hot like this, they get hit horribly with clematis wilt, and stem after stem turns brown and dies. I've tried spraying them with sulfur solution when I noticed the problem starting a week or so ago. Hasn't seemed to help. Anything I can do to prevent this happening every year?
Well, first off, the thing about clematis is I always say put it in full sun, but cover the roots and keep them cool. So and mulching around the root system of the clematis could be helpful. I'd be a little afraid of doing too much sulfur stuff on there unless you just have a mildew problem, because in some ways sulfur can also be kind of toxic, especially if it's too heavy.
And I know the spraying has to happen usually way before you see the mildew happen. So any kind of spraying you're doing is for the future.
Yeah.
So possibly try it a little bit sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps so. But yeah, generally clematis is a pretty good grower and pretty carefree. So
that would be disappointing to have mildew on that, though. They're such a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Midday Matters. Big thanks to Doug Hackbarth being here week after week the past
almost two years. Almost.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks to you as well, Laura Stein. We always appreciate your insights.
You're welcome, Sean. It's been fun.
And thanks, of course, to Jason Kissel, our regular first of the month guest who's always with us. We appreciate him. We appreciate you for listening, for all of your insights, all your questions and comments. I'm Sean Beter. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester.